Stacia Kraft, candidate for mayor, City of Salem, is joining us here on our fifth and final series of interviews here with the candidates running for mayor. Stacia, welcome. Thanks for taking some time to join us and for us to be able to hear your views on why you want to be mayor and of course, some of your platform ideas as well. So first up, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I don't know if anybody else thinks it's funny that a sports news channel is doing the blood sport of politics in Salem.
Well, you know, that's we're news and we're sports, and but you're right. I mean, I think they kind of mix up pretty well here. So yeah.
Yeah, they sure do.
All right. So let me tell our listeners here first up that we have selected basically three questions to share to have all the candidates kind of respond to, and they are one regarding a question regarding the schools, one on development and affordability, the other one on the possibility of what it means for having the former mayor as lieutenant governor, and then we also allow the candidates two extra topic areas that we'll talk about as we progress through this with Stacia. But Stacia, first up, I think because your candidacy, you're not a city councilor now, you're not a former councilor, you haven't run for political office, you're like all the four other candidates, maybe tell us, I think I can digress and make sure that people know why you're running, a bit about your background, again, since you don't have the elected offices, you know, on your resume, so to speak, which it may not be a bad thing at all, by the way.
Yeah, well, you know, my background, I'm a classical musician, and I'm married to a classical musician. And because that occupation is not a 9-to-5 job, I have always contributed quite a bit to my community in the way of volunteering in innovating projects. So big projects, so managing very, very large projects like the Salem Community Gardens. We had a large flea market and art market called the Derby Market. The Leslie's Retreat celebrations. And those projects created an intersection of my life and politics that sort of morphed into a different kind of community organizing, and that was a really focused around new development and helping neighbors manage new developments in their areas. So that's what I've been doing more recently. I started a group called Not for Salem, and that group supported and connected neighbors from different areas of the city, helping them navigate the process of some developments that were happening in the city. One of them was a large 425-unit project that was set to be built in the wetland buffer zone and on very contaminated soil. And another project, which started this organization, was a project at Lee Fort Terrace, which is elderly and disabled housing. So as candidates started to announce their plans to run, I didn't see anyone that was really leading in this cause, and so I decided it was necessary for me to do it.
Great. Good backstory here, I think, for the voters to know all that background about you. I'll just jump into some of these questions here and have you respond to questions I'm sure you've been handling all along in the campaign. But Salem Public Schools, your plans, your concerns over the Salem Public Schools.
Yeah, well, you know, our children are our future, and school success is primary to the success of our community. Historically, Salem was really at the front of public education. I mean, we know about Boston Latin School. Everybody's very proud of the Boston Latin School. Salem had the Salem Latin School. You know, we had very early roots with public education. My father was a public school teacher, and his mother, my grandmother, was a public school teacher when women were not allowed to be married and teach. So I've sent my children all the way through. They've graduated from Salem High School. So I've been pretty engaged as a public school parent throughout their education. So I met with Dr. Zreich yesterday just to ask him about his experience in Salem and what he felt he needed from a mayor. And he explained, you know, what he needed. He didn't want to be micromanaged. He'd like a partner to introduce him to the city and the various personalities around the city. And he shared his difficulties of stepping into a new job during COVID. You know, it happened right after he took the job. And after a really tumultuous period in our system, where we chartered an elementary school, the Bentley, and we dissolved another elementary school, the Bowditch, and then we had several principal turnovers and, you know, a scandal at the high school. And he came in right after that. So we agreed that there's a lot of healing that needs to happen. And it's part of the reason that he and Ellen Wheeler have announced a new mental health initiative called the Cartwheel Program. I also shared my experience with him as a parent of three kids who went through the system. And from that experience, I do have some concerns and goals for the system. The first is the loss of families that we experience starting at middle school and high school. It's a huge deficit to our school budget because many students leave, go to Salem Academy Charter, Essex, you know, Tech, and other districts through school choice that costs us a lot of money. So it's one of the reasons the new CTE program, you know, the tech program is so exciting because it'll keep families here who might otherwise be choosing the Essex Tech. My brother-in-law leads the new automotive department, and I visited them recently, and those students were so creatively engaged in problem solving. And they told me all about their connections with automotive businesses locally and plans to design and engineer green cars. This is very much related to the kind of education my kids at the Salt and Salt School, which is based on the Howard Gardner theory of multiple intelligences. And their education was very dynamic and exciting. People probably don't maybe relate this, but music and art are very similar. They're very physical and vocational, so I really am excited about those hands-on programs. The other thing that I think quite a lot about is our multilingual community. It's a tremendous asset. And we have had trouble with our language department all the way from elementary school through the high school. We have difficulty hiring teachers. This is something I've talked to Manny Cruz about, who's our state rep, and he's trying to cut some legislative red tape that prevents licensed foreign speakers from teaching in math because of certain tests. So I just think with the community we have, that multilingual piece is tremendous, and I would hope we could fix that right away.
Well, let me jump to topic number two, or question number two. It's kind of a two-part question, and I'm allowing, obviously, candidates to handle it the way they'd like to, but maybe a vision for Salem on development, but also keeping Salem affordable. So there's a development piece, which you've already sort of touched on a bit, but also, but obviously looking forward as well, but also the affordability piece, not just about affordable housing, but affordability overall. So, Stacia, your thoughts on that question?
Yeah, so the Now for Salem has been very active in trying to require better affordability in new projects. The Lee Fort Harris project was proposed first as market rate with, I think, 175 market rate units over the 50 that are now there. We really, when talking about this, we really need to clarify between affordable and subsidized housing. It's very confusing, all this language, and determine how the Boston Metro AMI definitions play into the gentrifying of Salem. Our policies need to differentiate between owner-occupied multi-unit rentals and the large corporate investments, whose goals really seem to be about creating passive income for their investors. And there's a big difference. The owner-occupied units are still some of the most affordable units throughout the city. We also have the issue of condo conversion, and I think there should be a differentiation between flippers and families who may want to convert properties they've owned for generations. Our housing roadmap has suggested that we have some incentives for multi-unit home buyers that will help renters buy homes. And, you know, this has always been a really good way of building wealth, you know, home ownership. We also have, you know, an explosion of Airbnbs and temporary housing units that are taking a huge toll on our housing stock because they're serving as hotels rather than owner-occupied units available for families. So, you know, that's something that needs to get attention. We also have the issue of our Salem Housing Authority selling off our subsidized housing and management to for-profit corporations. This was that issue that I was talking about with the Lee Fort Terrace. This movement is, you know, it promises that we'll get additional housing and better services, but the reality is really quite grim. Pequot Highlands was sold by the Salem Housing Authority to Wynn Corporation, and that's been recently sold to Silver Street Corporation. They listed as one of their newest assets. And because of my involvement with Not for Salem, I've gotten phone calls from, you know, from people in these different housing situations that are concerned. And Pequot Highlands has, you know, they've been reported, I think, in the Salem News about lingering cases of Legionnaire's disease and poor interior conditions, no managers on site. And this is not at all how it was presented, and it's not at all how the Lee Fort has been presented. You know, the Lee Fort project, which is being sold off to Beacon Corporation, will require the residents to be evicted first. These projects are pretty opaque, and I think that this new policy of the Salem Housing Authority is rather opaque. So it's pretty important that tenants and other facilities know that this is the new policy, maybe the new policy in Massachusetts, and they should be aware that this will be happening to them soon, very likely.
The former mayor of Salem, Kim Driscoll, now is the lieutenant governor, thus the special election, the special primary election, and so on. The primary on March 28 and the general election on May 16. But what's the advantage or of having the former mayor of Salem now at now in Boston at the State House as the lieutenant governor?
Well, our lieutenant governor is an extremely ambitious and capable woman. She is the mother of three small children, took on this job, and served our city for 16 years. So you really need to respect her ability to manage and get things done while caring for her family. It's Women's History Month, and we really need to remind ourselves that women across the world do these kinds of things, you know, care for their family and take on good jobs with less pay and less support than their male counterparts, and they lead the way for other women to follow. So that needs to be said. You know, during her tenure here, she created 100 of rental and condo units. She built our tourist economy into a large Halloween festival that happens and is, I would say, world-renowned. She's very familiar with our needs here in Salem, which range from updating school facilities to funding the educational programs like the CTE to growing transportation needs. So I would hope that she's in a great place to secure state funding and possibly support a free trolley for Salem that would really take a load off with our parking and transportation issues. And she's worked right along very closely with Mass Inc. throughout her time in Salem on education. So I'm pretty confident that she can give us some special attention for a new high school proposal and for additional CTE funding.
Exactly. Right. Can't hurt. I don't think.
That's
you're right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, and you're right. Obviously has achieved quite a bit as mayor of Salem and now beyond, obviously. Well, the two topics that that you selected, let me begin with one of them, is environmental justice. So tell our listeners about that and how it plays out as mayor of Salem and that issue in particular as it relates to Salem, but feel free to go beyond that as well.
Yeah. Well, I said that my involvement started with this project at Overlook Acres, which was in the wetland buffer zone and on a contaminated plot. So from that time, our group really tried to move to amend our wetlands and floodplains ordinance to limit new construction on our flood zones and wetlands. And that's, we are still in this struggle. We have 9 projects planned for our wetlands and flood zones in 8 square miles, believe it or not. I actually think this is the defining issue for this election. And I'm, again, not quite sure that people know all the details. We got grant money for a municipal vulnerability preparedness plan in 2014 and 2020. And that suggested that we relocate a lot of our infrastructure, or as much as infrastructure as we can from these flood zones. And I think in that suggestion was our MBTA station in particular, the Bentley School, the police station. And believe it or not, those are some of the locations which we are planning development. So as much as I can get that information out to people, the better. I talked a little bit about improving public transportation. I think it's a complaint that everybody has got that there are just so many cars on the street and it's impossible to get across town. So this this free, you know, trolley or bus service that I'm proposing would really relieve a lot of the pollution that we experience. The other thing that we need to do is encourage local businesses that serve the neighborhoods. You know, if you want to have a walkable community, you need to have grocery stores and services where you can walk. And right now, they're a little bit out of balance with our tourist business. So we need to, you know, focus on that if we want to keep Salem pedestrian friendly.
Right. No, feel free. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yep.
No, that's all right. You know, we also have to keep our eye on the pollution coming from the footprint power station and then watch as that develops into the new wind project, which people are both excited and apprehensive about because it is coming into a small historic neighborhood. So we're going to just have to keep our eyes on the size and the amount of the amount that neighborhood has to absorb in regards to just the development and trucks coming and going and such.
All right, I'm just going to jump to the last question here would be. I think your tying is cultural heritage, and that would regard. And that, is that related to the October celebrations and so on, or how we promote Salem?
Yeah. I mean, it actually connects many of the topics of development and our tourist economy, and our diversity. I mean, it's one of the most historic cities in the country, I would say. And we have a growing tourist economy based on our history. And this history is very culturally rich with stories of early settlers, the Revolution. We had major, major piece of history in Leslie's retreat, the witch trials, maritime, and, you know, new immigrants, which right now is presented in our El Punto, you know. And the current urban renewal that we're experiencing is really, it's threatening our cultural diversity, our architecture, what people expect to see when they come. Also, the you know, the imbalance with our architecture and history, and the Halloween festival needs to be in balance. I mean, many people are making their income from the Halloween festivities. So we need to be mindful of that, while also really paying attention to balancing that with these, you know, incredible riches that we have here. I mean, we just have so much. I think in order to do that, we've got to partner with the Peabody Essex Museum for them to share the vast inheritance that they've been given by Salem citizens, like historic homes and our archives, et cetera. We have several, they own several historic homes given to them by Salem citizens, which are not yet open. We need to, I would say, increase the proportion of CPA funds used for our historical municipal properties. We have several, and we have not, we haven't been, I don't think we've been giving them to maintain and preserve our properties. One example of that is the Pioneer Village and Camp Nomkeg. They're two historic sites that Salem, the city of Salem, owns, and have fallen into great disrepair, and now are, you know, now they're being threatened with demolition and movement. So that's a major subject. Along with, I have to say, we have beautiful brick sidewalks and cobbled streets, and we have yet to create, you know, preservation and maintenance guidelines for these things, for either our sidewalks, our cobbled streets, or our historic structures. So that needs to get tightened up, because what we have is really remarkable. If you travel at all in the world, you come back home and realize how much we have and what a really wonderful place it is to live.
Right. Well, Stacia, you know, I've listened to everything, and I'm struck with your you know, I think your background is, you came to Salem years ago, but you really appreciate the city of Salem and clearly really know the city of Salem to be able to share all of this information with us as well. So this is a city that you can really hear you really like this city of Salem for sure.
I do. Otherwise, I would not put myself in this position of running for mayor. And I think people may find it really hard to understand, but it's something I really, I think because I have a long experience here, you know, I've been here for 30 years, and because I've been engaged in, you know, public schools, in historic preservation, and in more, you know, more recently projects and in development, I really did feel like I needed to throw my hat in the ring, so to speak.
You got it. Well, Stacia Kraft, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, and thanks for sharing all of your insights with our audience, and hopefully we'll be able to talk again down the road at some point.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Bill.
Stacia Kraft with us, candidate for mayor, City of Salem, here on MSONewsSports.com.